ladies and gentlemen, and fellow golfers, for your entertainment.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa, brought to you by Hagen Oaks, America's most awarded golf facility, and Naturewood Home Furnishings, where it's all about choices and always about quality.
It's time for the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sactown Sports 1140. And as you know, Scott, we have a packed show again this evening. We don't even have time to talk about what golf courses we played or didn't play this week. We've got some great guests. We've got a lot of things we're going to learn tonight. And we will get started right after these messages.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa.
Golf to Go Radio Hour continues here on Sactown Sports 1140. Hi, I'm Frank LaRosa. And really thrilled to welcome Shim LaGoy, PGA Master Professional, to the show. Shim was recently inducted into the Northern California PGA Hall of Fame, and what an exciting night it was. Congratulations, Shim.
Thanks so much, Frank. It was really a very gratifying evening, you know, have family and friends and peers and be there with the other inductees. We had, you know, as you know, three other inductees, so I was one of four. It was pretty neat. It was a real neat evening.
I'll have you talk about briefly the other inductees in a moment, but you've been a golf professional for 44 years, a PGA professional, and it's an interesting number, which means a lot to you. Explain what that number means.
Well, it is a lot of businesses. When I was young growing up, you would see a lot of places where it was and Sons, you know, Joe's Hardware and Son, Billy's Hardware and Son. And I always thought my dad had a pretty neat job, and he was a PGA professional. And it turned out that this year, being my 44th year, I now tie my father. The two of us have had 44 years as PGA members. I unfortunately lost him in 1992, but you always feel like you got your dad around when you're into golf. You remember shots they taught you to hit. You remember needling over putts that were important. And in my particular case, I remember the first time I beat him, and he was a little bit nervous, and he kind of congratulated me. And I said, "Pop," I said, "you know, this is probably the last time. The last time you won is probably the last time, because I said, now I've got your number." And he laughed and ended up, he never did beat me again. It was a bone of contention with him until I finally beat him. So yeah, he'd be very proud.
You talked about how proud you were of him, the way he dealt with the members and the way people seemed to respect him as well.
Yeah, I thought in a sense, he was a bit of a celebrity at the club. You know, the people came in and they wanted to see Ray, and they wanted to talk to Ray, and they wanted to know what the newest joke was. And he had a remarkable ability. Like, if you came to our club and you were a guest, for a member guest, and maybe it was just a routine day for you and an old college roommate, your roommate might introduce you to him, and he'd say, "Frank, you got a little accent there. Where's home?" You know, and you might say, "Oh, like you just told me a little bit ago, I was born in Boston and I grew up in Wichita." Somehow he would put that into his mixture. And a year and a half or 2 years later, you'd come walking in the shop, in all probability, with that member. And he'd go, "Frank LaRosa, how the heck's everything in Sacramento?" And he would drop people to the floor. They would just look and they'd say, "How did he remember me?" And it's something I always tried to pride myself. When someone would come in the shop, hopefully I could grab their name quickly and say hello and make them feel welcome.
That's a skill that's remarkable, and certainly one we all should find a way to emulate. You started your career in Ohio, was that it?
In Ohio. We grew up there, grew up on the western part of Ohio in a town called Lima, which was an industrial town and now is a bit in the Rust Belt, a little suffering some growing, trying to regrow pains and urban renewal, like a lot of the Midwestern, what do you want to call them, industrial cities that have had a tough time with the world economy. grew up there. He was at a private club for many, many years. And then when I headed off to college, he decided to kind of give up the private club and hawked everything he had and grabbed a public golf course just outside of town and became the owner operator of his own business.
Oh, wow.
he always wanted to do. He said, you know, I've had enough bosses for these years. Now I can pick and choose what my program is. So he ran that for about 14 or 15 years, and then he ended up selling it. And he and my stepmom retired to Florida, and he was still teaching when he passed away, doing some part-time lessons at a little executive length golf course and keeping his fingers in the pie.
While you were in Ohio, you were encouraged to get involved in a charity event, which, you know, there's certainly no official record, but our guess is it may have been the first time this was ever done, something about a 100-hole challenge.
Well, a local pro and myself, so it'd be like Jay McDaniel and I between here and Claremont. A friend of mine, Greg Moore, who's still a PGA professional and operates, he's the general manager in actually Athens, Ohio, where Ohio University is, where he grew up. We challenged one another to see if we could play 100 holes in a day. And it was the time when people were having bowl-a-thons, and it was 10 cents for every line of bowling you did. So we reached out to our membership and said, we're going to challenge one another and see who can play the 100 holes. Well, by about 10 o'clock in the morning, we didn't have cell phones at that time, and our shops were calling one another. The local radio station was giving updates. The sports guy was saying, well, the two nutty golf pros are out there playing away, and they're at hole 60 now. So at about 10 o'clock, we realized the 100 holes was going to happen by noon, and we were going to be pretty much in the can with five rounds of golf done. So we said, let's keep going. And the members were all cheering us on. So we kept going. We went on till 7:30 that night, starting at 5:30 in the morning. And we played 200. I played 210 and he played like 216.
Wow.
I ended up with the best strokes to par because I was one over. He was about 12 over for the additional holes he played. And then, of course, your members get behind it. And I explained to you at the induction ceremony, one of my members used to listen to the, I think it was Frank Glick or Joe Glick show, used to be on WBZ in Boston at night. And where we lived in Ohio, the 50,000 watts went all the way to the Mississippi River. So you could hear WBZ at night just as clear as a bell, like KDKA and some of the other channels. So this guy called me. He interviewed me about playing the 100 holes. Then Sports Illustrated picked it up from one of my members. So they put a picture of me and the faces in the crowd, the little thing that you used to see in the column in Sports Illustrated. And it just ended up growing and growing. But we raised, I think I went back and looked at the records. We raised, each of us raised about $2,800 a piece for 200 holes. And the typical pledge was 10 cents a hole. Now, the last ones I've run at Arinda Country Club over the, you know, I've done 10 years in a row up until last year. I was averaging about anywhere from 75 cents to a dollar a hole, and you were taking in a significantly greater amount of money. But yeah, it's been that marathon concept, raise money for National Golf Day and put us over the top as the Northern Ohio PGA. And we won the national award from the PGA of America for raising the most money for National Golf Day.
210 holes and one over. You know, I'm happy if I've played the first three holes at one over.
The worst part was the morning, the 5:30 round. I think I was four or five over after the first round of the day. And then you just kind of get lost in the day and keep playing and play another hole. And of course the flags are in the same places and people are cheering you on. It was a lot of fun. It was a good time.
So let's press forward a number of years to Reno, Nevada, and you are one of four inductees into the NCPGA Hall of Fame. What did that mean to you when you first heard about that, Jim?
Well, I got a call from our honorary president, D.D. Moriarty, who you know, and she called and she said, have you got a moment? And I thought, uh-oh, here's a volunteer thing. What are they going to do? When somebody says, have you got a moment? That means you really have to have a moment. So I said, yeah, what's up? And she said, well, I'm just calling you. I want to be the first to inform you that you've been inducted, or you're going to be inducted into our Hall of Fame. You've been selected as an honoree. I said, oh, wow, that's amazing. And then she shared who the others were. And we have if you want me to, I'll go ahead and
sure.
Cisco was a longtime professional in the Modesto area and was one of our officers. She served on my team when I was president of the section. She was our secretary, which was the first lady officer in the PGA of America at the section level. She later went on to become a district director and actually ran for national office. So Sue was came through a lot of barriers. She, you know, if you want to say she broke the glass ceiling, that's fine. But she just was a very skilled PGA professional, very good in entrepreneurial ventures. She leased two or three golf courses in the Modesto area with long-term leases, and just was a bit of a pioneer as she formerly was an LPGA member, and then she came over and did the whole PGA membership and did very, very well for our section. And then you had a second recipient who wasn't able to make it there. Bless his heart, he's a little older and it wasn't something where he could be there. But from the Fry family, John Fry, and there were, I'm now learning, not knowing a whole lot about him until this happened. I started doing some research, and then I had a teaching pro that I teach with our PGA Hope program sent me an extensive overview of the Fry brothers. And I think there were five of them, and they had entrepreneurial ventures where they had sporting goods or golf goods shops. They had pro shops they were doing. I think there was a heavy involvement at Lake Chabot in introducing golf to minorities and to people that have of color that had not played golf before, because it was predominantly geared toward Caucasians. And the Fries were, you know, pioneers in getting people involved in the game and making golf available to everybody, I think, is probably the thing I've learned the most about them.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you got Mike Rawitzer, who was one of, again, a little like Sue, an entrepreneur, leased golf courses in the San Jose area, was at a private club for a while, got into the retail sporting goods with John Sherwood, and they had a chain of stores that was Sherwood's Golf that they worked with. And then, of course, his career kind of forked, and he became very interested in cutting horses and quarter horses, and moved his way down to Paso Robles. And when he got down there, lo and behold, here was a country club in financial straits. He helped take a look at it, and he ended up taking it over out of bankruptcy. And I think probably to this day, I think he still owns it and operates and manages two courses in the San Jose area. Very busy courses.
Pretty impressive group there.
Some pretty impressive people, and people that some of them, you know, they were mentors in a sense. You looked up to them, you saw what they did, you wanted to be a bit like them and maybe exceed what they'd been doing. So, you know, just sort of career guidelines, things that help you.
Scott, you were there for the evening. You had a chance to watch the whole proceedings, and Shim kind of teared up a little bit when he started talking about his family. What was your reaction to the night?
Yeah, and that was the takeaway for me. First of all, congratulations. Such a special event and such a great honor for you. But I had a chance to meet several members of your family who were there and sitting in that table right up front. And I can understand why you teared up, because you were able to celebrate it with those who meant the most to you there in Reno.
Right. Yeah, I'm fortunate. I have three sons and a daughter, and I've got five grandkids, three boys and two girls. They're all in one way or another athletes. And some have chosen to beat grandpa and try to beat grandpa and all that. They've chosen that sport. I've got my granddaughter is a shot putter for a small college in Rhode Island, and just broke their indoor record this year as a sophomore.
Wow.
My oldest is a bit of a football player. I've got one that's a junior golfer that plays on his high school team in Coronado. And I've got another one that's a football player that's going to play for Poway High this year as a sophomore, and looking forward to his season. And then my little granddaughter is a horseman. She's all about horses. And I think I should just say she's all about animals. If it's an animal, she's okay with it.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. That was a special moment. I'm glad I was able to to be there for that. But I do have to ask you, Shim, how did you wimp out after 210 holes and your partner played 216? I don't quite understand that.
Well, I don't think we knew where each other stood till 7:30 that night hit, and we said, okay, we're done. And when they added it up, he got me. And he don't believe he ever doesn't remind me about it too.
And to be one over, that's incredible. I was playing golf for the weekend. I was one over after eight holes, and I started getting really nervous thinking about it could be a round of my life. And of course I ended up with a nice 85, but that had to be pretty special to play that type of golf at the same time. That had to be a lot of fun.
It was neat. It was neat. And it's interesting. Some of the pictures that were picked up by my daughter-in-law and some of the things that were sent out on Facebook after the ceremony, I was deluged by responses from people. And the probably one of the interesting ones was three of my cart drivers who were about 16 to 19 years old and getting ready to go off to college and finish in high school, sent me emails congratulating me, excuse me, reminding me that they drove me around and helped me make all those pars and birdies.
So, oh, no question. They want the share in that. Yeah, for sure. Now, you had told me that Guinness wouldn't put it in their, you know, world records because they couldn't document that somebody hadn't played more, but I don't know. I want to see your wax statue with Ripley's, believe it or not, down on Fisherman's Wharf, because I mean, that is a remarkable accomplishment.
It was pretty special. And it was neat that the local sports writer in the Mansfield Journal, which was the local newspaper in Ohio, he had been playing it up and he took it personally and took it and ran with it and reached out to Guinness. And he said, I got something that I think qualifies for your standard. So he submitted all the paperwork. He did all this work behind the scenes. And then I received a really nice letter from Guinness. And I, you know, it's like the one you're getting when you're getting the college you want.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh God, this says Guinness on the return address. And I tore it open very carefully and said, we're pleased to compliment you on your outstanding performance. Your information was submitted to us. However, we don't have a category that talks about par and a number of holes. So
turned out, however, catch you every time, I'll tell you.
Yeah, it's however.
You know, Shim, as I mentioned on stage that night, I first met you when I got involved with the NorCal section, and it's 20 plus years ago, and you always impressed me as a true professional and a gentleman and a mentor that was so valuable to the younger professionals. I guess the final question I would have for you is what advice after your 44 years as a PGA professional, what advice would you have to new professionals coming into the game?
Well, it's interesting. The game is the same. The business has changed. I came up in an era where the 60 to 75 hour week was the norm. And if there was enough daylight, someone, if you remember in the last few years, has created a glow ball.
Yep.
Guess how well that was received in the middle of June after a 14 hour day and it's time to tee off with the couples glow tournament. So if you can put that in perspective, the game has changed a bit. I think I admire professionals who now take a little more family time, take the time to go and be it. I can't tell you the amount of fifth inning little league games I got to. You know, I got to see the last three or four, or I got to see my son wave at me from right field because he'd already done all the key spots and he had to do his basic stint in right field and pick daisies for a little bit. So that, I think, has changed a lot. I think the idea that you're going to have to give a little more than you receive will always go on in our business. You're going to have to reach out. You're going to have to try harder. I'm reminded, I was in a shop one time in Northern California, and I heard a member come in, and he was just absolutely elated. He'd made the first eagle of his life. And he was sharing it with the young man behind the counter. And Unfortunately, I don't think anybody had really taken the young man to heart in his career. And this man went ahead and explained how he'd hit the shot, and then he hit a fairway wood up on the green. It bounced, you know, for make it a better story, it bounced off a rake and it went up close to the hole, and he tapped it in. And he proceeded to hear from the young assistant, instead of being able to say, "Oh, that was great, Mr. Smith, you know, nice, great job," he immediately said, "Well, you know, last week I hit a 7-iron and knocked in a 4-footer." You know, and you could just literally see the air go out of this poor weekend warrior who had an amazing thing happen, and nobody took the time to pay attention to it. I would urge the people who are going to go forward with this, spend a little more time with the customer, pat them on the back. "Man, that was amazing. You know, did it really hit the rake, or do you think it missed the edge of the bunker?" You know, take time to be in their story and make them feel good about it. You know, give a little more of your time, give a little more of your expertise. I just think that's important. And I think that's going to be far more important in our future than it has been in our past.
Well, you've been doing that your entire career from what I've seen. And, you know, the Northern California section owes you a debt of gratitude for all you've done. And as golfers, we appreciate everything you've done for the game and for us. So congratulations once again, Shim LaGoy, PGA Master Professional and newest inductee into the NCPGA Hall of Fame.
Thank you very much. I sure appreciate it. You guys are great. Thanks.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Golf to Go Radio Hour continues here on Sactown Sports 1140 right after these messages.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa.
Golf to Go Radio Hour continues here on Sactown Sports 1140. I'm Frank LaRosa along with Scott Marsh, and we welcome in Lynn Cowan. Lynn is an amateur player in Northern California of incredible skill and talent and humility, all wrapped up into a perfect package. And Lynn and I have been friends for a while, and I was remarking a little while ago that even I wasn't aware of how many tournaments that she's played in over the years, and she's had an incredible career. Lynn, welcome to the Golf to Go Radio Hour.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, when did this all start, Lynn? When did you just start playing golf?
I started when I was 12. My mom and dad picked up some used junior clubs at a garage sale, and then my brother and I started playing, and just that's how it started. I mean, we just played at the Muni courses and just tried to learn how to play.
So many great players start their careers at Muni courses, and I would imagine, like many, you have an incredible love for municipal golf courses.
Yes, I do. That's where it all started.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it come full circle, and we're going to kind of fill in the some of the timeline here. But you just won the NCGA Senior Women's Championship. What an incredible feat! And congratulations to you on that honor as well.
Thank you. Yeah, that was kind of a surprise.
Well, maybe surprise to you. I don't think to any of us. You know, you and I had a chance to play a number of years ago, and I was just tell you the truth, at that time had no idea who you were as a player. I just knew you as a friend, and I was just amazed watching you go. What was it? Was that Olympic Club we played?
I think? Olympic Club,
yeah.
It was the media day for the U.S. Open.
Yeah. You were fun to play with. So between 12 and winning the NCGA Senior Women's Championship, a lot of things have happened. Did you play high school and college golf?
I played in high school on the boys team. And then I went to community college. I also played on the men's team there. Then after that, I transferred to San Jose State, but I did not make the team. Wasn't quite up to their standards.
Yeah, well, that was their mistake, I'm guessing.
Well, I was kind of a late bloomer.
You're a member at Sierra View Country Club here in the area, and have been for a long time. You and your husband Carl also are golf reps for golf equipment and apparel and things like that. So that's what keeps you busy when you're not playing. Lynn, how often do you get a chance to play, and how often do you have to practice to keep your game where it is?
Well, I play at least twice a week, usually on Tuesdays with the ladies club. And I play with Carl on Sundays, and then just fill it in with tournaments when the season starts. So I've been playing team play a little bit in the last couple of months, but now the season started and things are getting a little more serious. So I practice, as far as practice, you know, I'm not a really good practicer, I have to admit. Before a tournament or a big tournament, especially, I'm like, I'll go out this afternoon and go work on some things, mostly short game stuff. And I just got a new set of irons, so I'm still trying to learn the yardages and figure out how that works. And yeah, I'm not a big practicer. I have arthritis in my spine. I have a disease called ankylosing spondylitis, and I try not to push it too hard. And just, I try to rest a lot and just not break things.
You know, I it was interesting. You talk about you're going to go out and work on your short game. And I think many amateur players want to go out and grab the driver and hit it as far as they can. But it's the short game practice that kind of gets you, you know, to a point where you can score, where you can win these tournaments and things like that. And talk about the importance of the short game.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, I'm not that long of a hitter, and my short game right now is actually pretty sharp. I mean, that's how I won that tournament at Poppy Hills, the NCGA senior. I putted really well, and my chipping was decent enough where I always had opportunities to make par. I mean, very few times did I mess that up, but short game is where it's at. I mean, I get out driven a lot, but usually 100 yards in, I'm pretty sharp and around the green. So I think that's at least my secret to success.
And that success has gotten you a current index of what?
I think I'm a 0.6 right now.
That is a remarkable number.
That's one, depending on course rating and slope.
Yeah, but, you know, okay, so you might have to be a one at some courses. That's, you know, it certainly speaks to your talent and your experience and your willingness to practice the short game. Congratulations. That's an incredible number. Scott, I know you want to get down to a single digit, but getting down to 0.6, I'm not sure that's in the cards, huh?
I have a 0.6 covered. I just have a 1 and a 2 in front of it. So that's the only difference we got going on. I'm just enjoying being in the presence of 2 4-time winners with both of you having won 4-time awards here. We know Frank with his media award in the NCPGA as well. Lynn, you talk about the short game, and this is something that I'm kind of obsessed with as a casual golfer, is just really trying to improve that, because when you go out on the range, it's tougher to work on your short game and chipping and putting. I know at Sierra View, they have a tremendous bunker in short course. You can really work on it, but for the average golfer who maybe doesn't have access to the country club, you know, environment, what would you suggest for that golfer who's really trying to hone in that short game?
Well, you can always, hit chip shots in your yard if you have any kind of grass anywhere. But public courses have areas of to practice too. So
some do. It
depends on what, you know, what you have available to you.
Is there specifics that you work on, or yardage ranges or anything like that?
Mostly I just work on my feel. I'm just trying to feel out the distance of shots and how I want to play a shot. Whether I want to do like a bump and run shot, or I want to flop it, you know, try to get it close to the hole and let it just run out a little bit. I haven't really done any specific drills lately. I mean, way back when I was assistant coach at UC Davis, I mean, we used to have the kids do 20, 30, 40 yard, you know, pitch shots, but I haven't really done that in quite a while. So I'm a little looser with that, I guess I'd say.
No, and that's fine. It sounds like it's a lot of it's just feel and what you see from the individual shot, how it approaches you. And that talks to your talent and kind of innate ability. Cause I don't know if a lot of us common golfers see that on the course or not all the time.
Yeah. I guess it's just something you're blessed with. If you see the shot, kind of know how you want to approach it.
I love that. And you said that you coached at UC Davis. Of course, the Aggies just got a new women's coach out there this past week as well, as right. They continue to try to build their program.
Right. I just saw that this morning about Demi.
Pretty exciting for them, for sure. No doubt. The Aggie golf certainly on the rise in the local area. I see here that Paso Tiempo is your favorite course. Can you talk about why that is?
Sorry about that. Paso Tiempo is special. Well, I played one of my first, sorry about that, spam calls. Let's see, in 1986, I played in the U.S. Amateur when it was there. And Carl's dad was a member there. So it just kind of has some special memories. Carl's dad, Bob, caddied for me at that tournament. And it's just a great course. I mean, it's really difficult and challenging. And I mean, one time I had 7 birdies there and I did not break 80.
Oh, wow.
So there you go. I mean, it was birdies or doubles and bogeys. It was crazy round, but it's just a challenging course.
You've been able to play in California Senior Women's Championships, U.S. Senior Women's Amateur, U.S. Senior or U.S. Women's Mid Amateur, and you're the 4 times champion of the California Women's Amateur. And if I'm not mistaken, didn't you just qualify for the upcoming U.S. Women's Amateur? Is that what is it?
Yeah, the women's senior amateur, right. The U.S., yeah. It's that's the one that's going to be in Anchorage, Alaska at the end of the month.
What's golf in Alaska like?
I have no idea. This is a whole new frontier, as they say. Uh-huh. I'm not sure what to expect. I mean, I've only seen photos. It looks like lots of trees. It kind of reminds me of Tahoe in that respect. Just, I don't know, some of the holes kind of look like this area. So maybe it'll be familiar to me. It almost looked like Alta Sierra or even Auburn Valley, some of the contours and the, I don't know. So we'll see. I'm not sure what to expect, but I hear it's one of the better courses in Alaska. So.
And when is that tournament?
It starts, I think, July 29th.
Oh, it's right around the corner.
Yeah, it's just a few weeks away.
Well, we wish you great success there.
Well, thank you. I have another one. The Senior Women's Open qualifier is coming up, too. That's going to be on the 18th. And just by chance, it's going to be at Sierra View.
Oh, so wow.
That one, the championship is going to be at NCR Club in Kettering, Ohio. That one's in August. So I'm gearing up for that one too. I got to play in the Senior Open last year and that was super fun. Had a great time.
How does it feel when you were inducted into the NCGA Hall of Fame in 2019?
Oh, that was amazing. I was alongside Patty Sheehan and Bobby Clampett. And the late George Archer, he was inducted that year as well. It was an amazing experience. And I was really happy that my parents were able to attend. Since then, both of them have passed away. So having my parents there was really special since they were instrumental in starting me in the game. But it was quite an honor.
That's an honor well-deserved. With all of the accolades and you know, and accomplishments that you've had over the years, is there anything that that's still out there that you'd love to play in, or that you'd love to a course you want to play, or you know, something that you haven't done yet?
Well, I'd really like to win a senior amateur. That's definitely on my radar. As far as courses, you know, I haven't been to Scotland. Carla, I've been to Ireland, but I haven't been to Scotland. I don't know. Maybe some courses in Canada. I don't know. I haven't been around. If there's not a tournament there, I really don't know. So I'm sure there's a few. I'd have to give that some thought.
Well, I recommend Banff.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just curious. What's your best score at Sierra View in terms of...
Deer View. I shot a 65 a couple of years ago.
Okay. All right. I know course knowledge is going to come into big play for that tournament upcoming.
Yep. Definitely have a slight advantage. Me and my friend Karen Garcia. Karen won the senior AM in 2015. So she and I are gearing up for this one, see if we can make it to Ohio. We actually played on a USGA state team. She and I were on the same team. And we played at that NCR course. So it'd be kind of cool to go back to, since it's a course we've already played in a USGA tournament. So that would be cool if we both made it.
Yeah. Is Sierra View, are they making any extra preparations? Do they set up the course any differently for a tournament like this? Just out of curiosity.
You know, I have no idea. I'll ask, but I really don't. I'm not sure what they do or what the USGA asks of them. I don't know. I don't even know the tees yet. Hopefully we'll find out very soon so I can start practicing from the right tees.
Well, two big tournaments coming up for you in July. We wish you great success, Lynn Cowan. You're an incredible performer. You know, your golf game, you know, it's hard to describe, you know, how well you've done over the years and the heights you've reached, and all from right here in Little River City. So we appreciate knowing you. We appreciate what you've done for golf, and wish you great success in the upcoming tournaments, and look forward to catching up with you down the line.
Sounds good.
Lynn, there's one thing I have to say though. Like, if I read this correctly, you only have one hole in one still. And I know that Frank has three here as we currently are speaking. He tells us about it every week.
Well,
That's another story.
That's a sore subject. Carl reminds me of that all the time. That I've only given him one hole in one. Every time I'm on a par three, he's so funny. Sometimes he videos me without me knowing it on a par three, trying to see if I'm going to get a hole in one. He thinks I don't try. I try.
Yeah, I would trade a couple of holes in one for your index any day of the week. So yes. you keep doing what you're doing.
Okay, sounds good.
Golf to Go Radio Hour continues here on Sactown Sports 1140 right after these messages.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa.
Golf to Go Radio Hour continues here on Sactown Sports 1140. How you doing? Hope you're enjoying the show. My name is Frank LaRosa. Along with co-host Scott Marsh, we are here for the hour of golf talk on Sports 1140. And I'm pleased to welcome Ed McGargill. Ed is the general manager of Coyote Moon Golf Course. Now, Coyote Moon is maybe a course that you might not be aware of because it's right not right in our general vicinity. But it's close enough that you can get up there in a short order and have a great round of mountain golf and a totally new experience. Ed, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. You know, Coyote Moon, I'm going on memory. It's been a long time since I've been able to get up there and play that course. Again, you have you're up in the mountains, so the elements kind of tell you when you can open the course and when you have to close the course. So when did you open this year? And tell us a little bit about where you're at.
We opened May 20th this year. We are in Truckee. We are literally right off Interstate 80, first exit in Truckee. a little higher, about 6,200 feet. So yeah, we're right on Northwoods Boulevard as you're driving up to Tahoe and Honor.
How was your winter and how was it when you opened this year? Did you have any major issues?
No major issues, actually. The course, I've been here since 2005. I've never seen it come out better from winter. The storms we had in December, the 10, 13 feet of snow was a perfect blanket for all the golf courses up here.
And a blanket of snow is a good thing for the golf course. You know, if the uninitiated would think that, oh my gosh, that's got to ruin it. But tell us about that process, about how you get the course ready for winter.
When we close our doors in October, we aerate everything. And then we apply snow mold fungicides and stuff like that, wait for the snow. When the snow finally falls, which it did in December this year with, 10 feet of snow, it's perfect. Then come March, we have to dig out the greens. We run a snow cat. We push it down to about a foot and a half, and then snow blow the rest. And then, reapply the fungicides.
You know, it's an amazing process. And as players, we walk onto your first tee and really don't give much thought to everything you went through during the winter and what you have to do to kind of keep it up and running during the summer. And so hats off to your crew and your superintendents to create a really fine playing experience for us. What is it, about 6 months that you're open, I guess, huh?
Yeah, about 6 months. But we start working in end of February, beginning of March. We start clearing car paths, we start getting out there on the course, so getting it ready for the nice summertime.
So as I said, it's been a while since I've been up there, and obviously the one hole that everybody remembers, no matter how long it's been, is that par three with the highly elevated tee. And the watching the ball take forever to drop to the green and hope it's somewhere near in the vicinity is really a lot of fun.
Correct. Number 13, it's our signature hole, about 100-foot drop. And, it plays about 2 to 3 clubs less than the yardage.
I like that. So for the uninitiated, we drive up, we pay our green fee, and we're standing on the first tee. What can we expect and what should we know about the course before we start trying to whack it all over the place?
Oh, well, it's pretty generous off the tee boxes here. The first tee starts off the par five. So you can kind of warm up as you ease into the round, as they like to say. So it's beautiful. It overlooks Truckee. You look down, you can see Interstate 80. It's just one of the most gorgeous golf experiences, greatest tee boxes you could ever stand on, I think.
Yeah, the views, the vistas, and everything you see, the large granite rocks, the trees, the green fairways, cutting through the mountains. It is kind of an ethereal experience when you're standing on those tees. You can kind of get lost in the moment.
You totally do. And if you're lucky enough, like the other day, we had a mama bear and her cubs walking right across the fairway. So it's beautiful.
Scott, have you had a chance to play Coyote Moon?
I have. The views are incredible, but I'm wondering about the bears. When I was in South Carolina, I hit a ball up against an alligator, and I was wondering what the ruling is. Do I have to play that? Do I get a 2-club move? What's the ruling on the bears up there?
You probably want to re-tee. Okay. I wouldn't even come close.
Without penalty, I'm assuming, right?
Of course.
Okay. All right. Fair enough there. But the views are incredible. That's the one thing when all my buddies play this course and when I've been up there, the one word that comes out, actually it's two, because spectacular precedes it, spectacular views. And I'm sure that's the one thing you hear more than anything else, I would imagine.
It is the beauty of the golf course. The best thing about this golf course is there are no homes on it. It's pure mountain golf. And once you leave the first tee, you don't see anything until you make the turn. And then you go out on number 10, you don't see anything until you reach number 16. So it's beautiful.
It's absolutely gorgeous. Now, I will say it is a Brad Bell design course. And those of us in this area know Brad Bell well from the Ridge. We know about his greens and how undulating they are. So the greens are certainly a challenge up there once you get to them.
They can be. We keep the speeds, fairly about 10 and a half, so it's not really unfair, but they are undulating.
Absolutely. They will certainly test, or at least they certainly tested me, Ed, let's put it that way. I have to say, when I went up to Truckee, one of my most memorable weekend trips just with buddies golfing was we stayed up at Donner Lake. We played Coyote Moon in the morning, and then we went over to Old Greenwood and played that in the afternoon. And that was a great way to spend a day and play 36 holes.
Not bad. That is a good day right there.
Yeah, no question about it.
You know, you use the term mountain golf. And for the uninitiated, you know, mountain golf has a sort of a different set of challenges. Number one, the altitude. You know, you walking around on those fairways at the higher elevations, you can get a little winded and a little tired if you're not used to walking. But you know, you counter that with the beauty and the elevation and all of the things that you're going to see. Mountain golf, I think, is Gary Gerald's favorite. He always loves playing up there in the mountains. But what does mountain golf mean to you, Ed?
Peaceful setting. You're out in the woods. If you're coming to the mountains, why wouldn't you want to go for a hike in the trees and the beauty of the mountains? That's what we have here. Mountain golf is, yeah, you're up in the elevation and you got nature, you got wildlife, you got everything around you. That's what it pretty much means to me.
What would you say in terms of club selection? We know on 13, it's 2 to 3 clubs, but in general, are you getting 10% more carry? Is it 5 to 7? Like, how do you estimate that, Ed?
10%. 10% is, the number that you want to go with. So everybody loves it when they come up the mountains and they see their drives, you know, go from 225 to, you know, 250, 260. It's great.
You know, as a resort course, you offer many of the same amenities as other courses as well. You certainly do tournaments and events up there as well.
Correct. We do host a lot of group outings. We had an NCGA event up here a couple weeks ago. There was about 100 players. It's just a place that buddies like to come and play and have a good time. A lot of bachelor parties. Yeah. So. Well,
and I would think ultimate compliment too is I know there was an NCPGA event up in the area last weekend, and a lot of the professionals came and played your course the following Monday. So it speaks a lot to the course when the professionals want to come out there and play it before they head back down the mountain.
That's correct. They do. They step on that first tee and lose themselves out here in the mountains. That's what they love.
I can lose myself on any golf course though. And it mostly has to do with the, you know, where I'm hitting it, I suppose. You're part of the Wilson Golf Management Group, and there are a series of really impressive golf courses in the group. Can you kind of go through the list?
You got Cata Vedera, which is pretty much the mothership of all of us. It's a private club there in Lincoln. Empire Ranch in Folsom, Apple Mountain up there just above Placerville. You got Teal Bend in Turkey Creek, and it's a great mix of all the golf courses are a great mix, and they complement each other.
That is a great mix of golf courses and some of the more popular courses in our area as well. What's it like working for Jeff? He's been in the business a long time. He's a good man.
He is. He's a great man. Best boss I've ever had. I've been working with him since 2010 when he took over Coyote Moon, and I don't regret one day of it. So it's a pleasure.
What's your golf game like, Ed?
What golf game? I don't play much golf these days. In the wintertime, when I got some time to myself, yes. But, I, you know, if you asked me to pass my PAT right now, I probably couldn't. So,
isn't it interesting, though, and you hear that more often than not when you ask people in the golf business about their game. And, you know, unless they're a playing professional, people in the golf business don't have a chance to play much golf. They're too busy doing their jobs.
Correct. You got good weather. Golf and construction probably is a worst profession to play golf.
So your day starts pretty early and probably goes pretty late, I'm guessing.
Yeah, for the most part. You know, get here in the morning and leave late in the afternoon. And yeah, that's how it goes.
not a bad place for your office, though.
It's a beautiful place for my office. You look out the window and you just see green and trees, and it's great. People having fun. That's what it's about.
So if I want to make a tee time for Coyote Moon, how am I going to do that?
You can either call the golf shop at 530-587-0886 or get on our website. We have online bookings.
It seems pretty easy.
It is. It's simple. We try to make it simple.
Make it simple. Make a tee time. Get on that first tee. Lose yourself. Then get on the 12th tee. Was that the par three?
13.
Yeah. And stay away from the bears.
Exactly. And the coyotes. They're all over the place. Yes. The pups will steal your balls too.
Can't let that happen.
Perfect recipe for a great day. Ed McGargill, the general manager at Coyote Moon Golf Course. Thanks so much for being with us on Golf to Go. Look forward to getting up there and seeing you and reacquainting myself with Coyote Moon.
Well, thank you guys for having me.
Well, Scott, this wraps up another hour of the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sactown Sports 1140. We've talked to some great people every week, and today was no exception.
Fastest hour in radio. Great show, and I can't wait to watch the American Century Championship this weekend.
Yeah, we've had some personal experience with that tournament and those folks, and our chance at a hole in one on 17 at Edgewood Tahoe, and we didn't make it, so we're pulling for them, right?
And I will neither confirm nor deny if I have anything that I'm extra rooting for with Charles Barkley this weekend, Frank.
Okay, good. Golf to Go Radio back next week. Hope you join us.